Finance Committee meeting of Monday, April 28th, 2025, and ask Dave to please call the roll.
Council President Vidiver.
Here.
Council Vice President Govindarajan.
Here.
Oliver Veer.
Here.
Oliver Figueroa Cole.
I'm here, and my camera seems to be disabled by staff. Can someone fix that, please? Thank you.
Alder Madison.
Here.
Alder Evers.
Here.
Mayor of Quorum.
Thank you. All right. Thank you, staff, for fixing the Alder's camera. Our first item of business is general public comment. We have one registrant for general public comment, Tyler Brunsell of District 11, representing the Urban Community Arts Network. I'm guessing this is on item 3, but Tyler, if you want to go ahead.
Yeah, for sure. So my name is Tyler Brunsell. I'm the Creative Strategy Coordinator for Urban Community Arts Network, and I'm speaking on behalf of the agenda item number 3. So over the years, I've noticed a consistent trend of artists of color, particularly Black musicians, experiencing the effects of underrepresentation in our music ecosystem. From the inability to find like-minded creatives who also look like them, to finding places to gather and create, to a loss of pre-pandemic and projected income based on the limited paid performance opportunities for artists of color in Madison, I can say confidently the Mad Lit event series is one of few spaces taking into consideration the need for our artist communities and art consumers of color to be with one another, all while offering fair payments to those participating in the series. The funding previously provided by the city has supported every aspect of the event series, supporting the connectivity between our musicians, vendors, visual artists, and community members. From an audience perspective, Mad Lit has essentially placed its participants in a sold-out venue representative of their consumer base. Hundreds to a near 1,000 of attendees per event on the 100 block of State Street means Madison residents and travelers are taking the opportunity to interface with creative entrepreneurs they may not have otherwise interacted with. Additionally, the businesses along State Street benefit from their presence due to an increase of foot traffic. Aside from economic impact, research consistently shows that strong social connections, inclusive public spaces, and cultural representation are crucial factors in community health. Events like Mad Lit strengthen social cohesion, creating a space where residents of all backgrounds can gather, interact, and celebrate diversity. These interactions build trust, reduce isolation, and help create the sense of belonging that is essential for mental and emotional well-being. By intentionally centering artists, vendors, and communities of color, Mad Lit also actively works to decrease discrimination. It provides a public, highly visible platform where Black, Indigenous, and other artists of color are celebrated for their creativity, leadership, and entrepreneurship. This representation challenges harmful stereotypes and builds a more equitable community culture. Mad Lit is an essential event series contributing to the continued growth of our music ecosystem, amplifying the direct, indirect, and induced economic impact of our creative community. Thank you for your previous support, and I hope that you will continue to invest in this economic and cultural asset that strengthens Madison's future. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there any questions for this registrant? Seeing none. Seeing no questions. Then we'll go to disclosures and recusals. Are there any disclosures or recusals on today's agenda? President Vidiver?
Item 10, I am an employee of the Wisconsin Department of Health Services, and that will not affect my vote.
Thank you, Alder. Are there any other disclosures or recusals on today's agenda? Seeing none, we'll move on then to the consent agenda. We have registrants wishing to speak on item 3 and on item 6 and item 11 is a report out. So those three will be separated from the consent agenda. Are there any other items that members of the body wish to see separated from the consent agenda at this time? President Bitiver?
I believe item two is also a report out.
Yes. Item two. Any other items that members of the body would like to see excluded from the consent agenda at this time? Seeing none, then we will exclude items 2, 3, 6, and 11 from the consent agenda. Can I have a motion, please, on the consent agenda?
Move to adopt.
Is there a second?
Second.
Moved and seconded to adopt the consent agenda with the recommendations therein. Is there any objection to recording a unanimous vote in favor of the consent agenda at this time? Seeing no objection, we'll adopt the consent agenda, and that will bring us to item two, which is Legistar 87883, the Personnel Board Report on Position Studies Approved Through Authorized Administrative Actions. I am guessing this is a report from HR, and in fact, Iman is here. Iman, go ahead.
Good afternoon, Council. I have issued the quarterly report to the Finance Committee at the request of the Finance Committee for the personnel authorized administrative adjustments that we've done in the first quarter of 2025. As you see in the report, there were only four administrative adjustments that were made. I'm happy to answer any questions about them. Specifically, they're really just getting the classifications at the right levels to either allow for career progression or staffing at the right location, or in the case of building inspection, it was to reclassify a position at a lower level to better fit the needs of the agency. And then the last item that we addressed was an old classification that we are retiring along with the employee who left that classification as well. And using an existing classification in its place at the same comp group and range.
Thank you, Iman. Are there any questions? Seeing none, then I suppose for technicality, a motion to accept the report.
Accept.
Second.
Moved and seconded to accept the report. Is there any discussion? Seeing no discussion, is there any objection to recording unanimous vote in favor of accepting the report? Seeing no objection, the report is accepted. Thank you again, Iman. All right, item three is Legistar 87768, a substitute providing Urban Community Arts Network Limited a $30,000 grant for a MadLit program on the 100 block of State Street using Small Business Equity and Recovery Program funds and authorizing the signing of an agreement for that purpose. On item three, we have a number of registrants wishing to speak, so we'll start there. And our first registrant wishing to speak is Karen Reese of District 14, representing the Urban Community Arts Network, to be followed by Nick Pivach, to be followed by Lorian Carter. Do we have Karen Reese? Karen, you should be able to speak. Oh, you looks like you've muted yourself again. There you go. You look like you're unmuted on our end. But we can't hear you if you're speaking.
Can you hear me now?
Yes.
Okay, we'll try that one.
Excellent. Thank you. Go ahead. You got 3 minutes.
Others will say more about the content of MadLit, but I wanted to say that we've really appreciated the city's support of MadLit for the past 4 years. And while we know we weren't a dedicated budget item, the Economic Development Committee not only enthusiastically supported continued funding of MadLit, but had increased the funding over the years. So it was a little bit of a shock to learn that funding would be significantly cut only a few months before the first event of the 5th annual MadLit event series. It's my understanding that the allocation for MadLit is only about 6% of the $500K fund, but that 6% will make a giant impact on our ability to put on a quality event series in just 2 months from now. While MadLit is ultimately the vision of Rob Franklin, who you will also hear from, the pathway for this event being able to happen in downtown Madison is something Urban Community Arts Network has been paving since 2010. And when Rob and I chaired the task force on equity in music and entertainment in 2018, it took the mostly white committee members about 45 minutes to agree that the root cause of the inequity was racism. One of the main recommendations in the report accepted in February of 2019 was that within 5 to 10 years, the city of Madison should work to support a music festival featuring hip-hop, music, dance, visual arts, and R&B. And so MadLit really fulfills that recommendation with the city support. In the 2020 report from Sound Diplomacy that the city also funded, a SWOT analysis revealed a significant lack of venues for all types of musicians and a poor venue consistency in terms of hosting Black culture or hip-hop related events. And the report also identified a need for a place in Madison for Black, Indigenous, and people of color to go to socialize. We still only have 2 Black-owned bars in Madison, and neither of those are downtown. MadLit does serve as a venue of sorts over the summer. This report also had several recommendations that support the concept of MadLit and improving racial equity overall in our music ecosystem. But MadLit is a space that creates a welcoming environment for all people in downtown Madison. And it's a space where all people can come, where people of color can see performance artists and business owners that look like them, and a space where white people can come and interact cross-culturally. And sometimes it's the only space accessible in the city to some of our performers and business owners.
You have about 30 seconds.
Aside from benefiting artists and communities of color, MadLit has had a notable impact on existing businesses in the 100 block of State Street. Michelangelo's, Clary's, and Teddy Wedger's often stay open late for the events, and Ian's and the convenience store see increased business and gain new customers. Both Michelangelo's and Clary's have expressed appreciation for this increased business, and Ian's even offers us free slices for our volunteers. So the event really creates a lot of value for the city, and I hope you will support the amendment. I will be on for questions if needed later. Thank you.
Thank you. Well done. You came in exactly on time. Next registrant is Nick Pivac of District 12, to be followed by Lorian Carter, to be followed by Natalia Hasarola. Nick?
Yep. Good afternoon, everyone. My name's Nick Pivac, and I am calling to support the substitute. I should have known that Karen was going to register before me, so I'll keep this brief because she hit a lot of really great points. I guess the main things I would emphasize is, one, having lived in Madison as both a student, as an adult, all over town, MadLit is truly one of the few spaces where I have looked around and felt that this is what the community can and should be. From seeing people from all different corners to seeing friends, people that I've never met before, but also the random passersby who are just walking State Street as visitors of our community and stopping by to see what the heck is going on and why are there people dancing in the street on a Friday night. It really is something incredible. The final other point I would make is, given the continued reality of the shifting of State Street, the recent groundbreaking of the Wisconsin History Center, the continued discussions around the Veterans Museum, I think it's imperative that the city continue to invest at the top of State Street, especially given things around the construction, as it is, you know, as always cited by the bid, the most foot trafficked crosswalk in the entire state, and that we should really be putting energy and dollars into supporting this incredible community event, which allows, allows our community to really appreciate all the incredible things that we have here, from the stunning locale to the incredible talent from all over the city. Thank you.
Thank you. Our next registrant is Lorian Carter of Brown Quail Court, to be followed by Natalia Hasarola, to be followed by Marcus Porter. Lorian? Do we have Lorian?
Mayor, I don't see Lorian online.
Okay. Then what about Natalia Hasarola of District 4, to be followed by Marcus Porter, to be followed by Kini, sorry, I don't know how to pronounce your name, Alan Wallace.
Mayor, I'm not seeing Natalia.
Okay. How about Marcus?
Hi. Hello?
Hi. So, Marcus Porter, District 18, go ahead.
Hi. So, yeah, so I'm Marcus Porter. I was one of the very first artists to perform for Mad Lit when they first started up. And just to see where it has gone in these past few years has been amazing because of the support that has been shown by all of you. And I would like to see that continue. Just from the aspect of, right, it's given artists like myself and many others a bigger stage, especially where hip-hop isn't always accepted, or dance or poetry. Like, it has given all of these spaces for minorities to do what they have to do and, you know, be engaged with their city. Like, I'm from Madison, so this is something that has been needed forever. And now that it's here, it needs to stay. That's how I feel about it, especially even, like I said, seeing the numbers from last year to being 7,000 people and from 3,000, like, it's amazing. So I just urge and ask y'all to continue to support this because it's needed. It's needed as, yeah, just for creatives.
Thank you. Our next registrant is Keeney, maybe Alan Wallace of District 6, to be followed by Rob Franklin, to be followed by Dwight Hayes.
Hello, everyone. My name is Keeney Alan Wallace, and I'm speaking as someone who's a Black queer person in Madison, also someone who's worked with Black and brown youth on and off for the last 5 years. And I'm going to make it short and sweet. But now is the time more than ever to invest in projects and programs that uplift and give a platform and community to artists, poets, advocates, and creatives. Now is the time to invest in projects and programs that are a platform for peace, love, and freedom. And thank you guys for your time. That's all I have to say.
Thank you. Our next registrant is Rob Franklin of District 6, representing Urban Community Arts Network, to be followed by Dwight Hayes, to be followed by Corey Dean. Do we have Rob?
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Cool. First of all, thank you for allowing me to speak this evening. We're entering year 5 of Mad Lit, and for the past 4 years, we've been doing the work. And doing the work includes making sure that we provide opportunities for voices that don't necessarily get a chance to be heard. To me, that is what makes the fabric of Madison so beautiful, is when everyone gets the opportunity to do that. And funding being cut from this program kind of puts us kind of in a position, tough position, to be able to not be able to do that. I think the work has been effective. I mean, if you look at the outreach from UCAN itself, being contacted by organizations like The Bid, you know, to help kind of create more programming, it shows that we have an impact and effect. You know, when you start seeing venues that are now booking acts that pretty much graced the Mad Lit stage and weren't getting on those stages, you know, that speaks to the impact of what we're trying to do. And all we're trying to do is do right by the town. And that means, you know, making sure that all of us are heard and all of us get these opportunities, whether it be musicians, visual artists, or small business vendors. We just want to be able to showcase what we have and help to build the culture and really hit that progressive Madison that we're all trying to get to. That's all I have to say. Thank you.
Thank you. And then our next registrant is Dwight Hayes of District 16, to be followed by Corey Dean.
Hello, all. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Hello. Great. Thank you for the opportunity to speak up for the event itself. My name is Dwight Hayes. I am a business owner, business management, youth leader, and director in the community. And I have been a patron of Mad Lit since the very beginning that it started. I look at it as a viewer of Mad Lit is an opportunity to have diverse cultures enjoy the same air. I've been there, like I said, every year, and it's a pleasure to see open talent have the backing and support that they need to have the visual and be seen. And it's always an enjoyable show, whether you're LGBT, white, black, whatever the color may be, the diversity in that crowd is always comforting, and we're always treated well by the businesses on State Street as we enjoy the show as well. I have the pleasure to know Rob Franklin personally, and he is a very strong, positive leader in our community, and his voice is heard through these messages of the Mad Lick and the performance shows. I'm really urging that the funding stay for him and his program really be highlighted as something that's offered by Madison, Wisconsin. Thank you all for your time.
Thank you. Our next registrant is Corey Dean of Middleton.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes, go ahead.
All right. So I would like to say that I was born in Madison, Wisconsin. I've been a resident my entire life, and I've been a hip-hop artist in Madison for the last 8 years and a member of the African community for the last 27 my entire life. I've opened in wonderful venues, and I've also performed for a crowd of 10 people who didn't even know music would be there. I say this to say that I've been throughout the entire community, venue to venue, and have really gotten in the community. So with all this knowledge that I've accrued of person, there is not a single place in all of Madison that represents the community as well as Mad Lit does. Madison systematically struggles to provide a consistent place for people who look like myself and many others to meet and feel proud and truly get enveloped by their culture and feel represented. And Mad Lit is a beacon for those unrecognized. It creates a safe and a proud place for artists, small business, and the marginalized people of Madison to make our presence known. I would say that if you've been to a Mad Lit, you will, especially on Latin night, you will see an ocean of faces that stretch down almost the entirety of culturally diverse community members who would otherwise not interact. This heals the community. This generates business and revenue. This makes Madison what Madison should be, especially since Madison, the community virtue is something that's heralded all the time. Mad Lit does that better than any other thing I've seen in Madison my entire life, especially since, I will say this, there has been, in the half a decade it's been going on, there has not been a single major public disturbance, violent outbreak, or tragedy at Mad Lit, proving that it stands diametrically opposed to the negative narrative that hip-hop is always painted in. Madison is a wonderful city, but I think what makes the city wonderful is community. And as I said, Mad Lit does a better job, I've seen personally, build community and foster real genuine relationship over cultural boundaries and barriers than any other event in the entire city. So I'll wrap here because I don't want to take everyone's time today. But I sincerely hope that everyone takes into consideration what Mad Lit does for the people who might not look like the average Madisonian statistically. So thank you and have a wonderful day, everyone. And everyone is doing a great job. Support Mad Lit.
Thank you. That is our last registrant wishing to speak. Are there questions for any of the registrants on this item? Alder Madison.
Thank you, Mayor. I do have a question for anyone from UCAN to answer. Y'all did an amazing job of, like, as I was, making my notes. But can someone talk just briefly about the difficulty in recovering this amount of, you know, potential cut, like cutting what you received last year to cutting that in half this year and by the event just coming up in a couple months? If you could just expand on that impact.
Karen, you want to go ahead?
Yeah, thanks. So we have been experiencing, like many nonprofits at the moment, we're kind of in a slump after all of the excitement post-pandemic where people are interested in investing in arts and culture and particularly DEI types of events. Fundraising and philanthropy has definitely been a little bit more difficult. Now, we're still raising the rest of, I mean, we have a lot of the rest of the budget secured for Madlit, but $15,000 is a big lift for us to have to make up in just a couple of months. If we did not get the full 30, we would likely have to cut a couple of the events from the program. We were hoping to do 6 this year. We would probably have to cut that to 4 unless we were able to get someone major out of the blue. So it would be very difficult.
Thank you. I have one more follow-up question. Can you also talk about your organization's participation in some of the previous committees that released the 2 reports, like the Greater Madison Music City Recovery Framework and the, what was it, the Task Force on Equity and Entertainment Reports. Specifically, I want to know how Madlit sort of meets any of those recommendations in either report.
Yeah, so in the Task Force on Equity in Music and Entertainment, the one it most specifically matches is recommendation number 4, which was saying within 5 to 10 years, the city should work to support a music festival featuring hip-hop music, dance, and visual arts. Madlit really does that. I think, you know, the pandemic kind of fast-forwarded us into, you know, having a very strong need and provided resources that would fit that need, but we were able to accomplish that goal. And another piece that's in that task force report and is also supported in the sound diplomacy report is looking for either a full-time staff position to add to the arts as a liaison to the community or an actual office of cultural affairs, so that we have an office that's managing arts and culture and can really focus on making sure racial equity comes out. So those are the 2 event-related type things. The sound diplomacy report talked a lot about the deficit that Madison has in not only venues to support smaller local acts, but really recognizing that we just don't have anything here for the Black community. We don't have anything for hip hop. We don't have anything, you know, consistent for Black artists or for Black community members to come in and enjoy that kind of music. And we also know that that has resulted in brain drain from the city. So the report talks a lot about the importance of that, not only for the purpose of the culture and diversity, but really for our overall economic benefit and opportunity. If we want to keep people here, if we want to get tourists coming here, that was a key point that the report raised for us to improve.
Thank you, Karen. I just have 2 more questions. Is Dwight Hayes still available? Are you still there?
Yeah, Alder, he is.
All yes, right. Yes, I'm still here.
So, Dwight, I know that you are the owner of Hayes Place on the north side. Can you tell me, does, you know, for you and your family being able to attend an event like Madlit Downtown, did that provide any sort of, like, inspiring on what you've created and, you know, seeing that you can also do it, too, on the opposite side of town?
Absolutely. Rob offered me the idea of having almost like an after party. A lot of patrons, me and my wife went last year and the year before, as I stated, and a lot of the patrons from Madlit came over to Hayes Place to have that adult feel carry on. So it definitely provided opportunities for me as well.
Thank you. So like mentorship, it sounds like.
Oh, absolutely. So also my youth to, you know, teach these children the younger people. I don't want to say children because I'm old. To teach them other avenues that they can reach and spread their skill and ability and not just be one-sided or held down because of the color of their skin, just an opportunity for a broad scale.
Thank you. So thank you, Dwight and Karen. So my last thing is not necessarily a question, but a correction on the registrant report. There were 59 people registered in support, 1 opposed, but I believe the person who registered to oppose actually supported and hit that by mistake because she send us an email to support it. So there were actually all registrants were registered to support. 1 just, I think, made a mistake. Thanks, y'all.
Awesome.
Thank you, Alder. Alder Evers, questions?
Yes, thank you, Mayor. This question, I think, should go to Karen. Karen, you mentioned that you have $500,000 budgeted for this overall event and that you've been doing. Did I understand that correctly? And that
no, the $500,000 was the fund, the SBER fund, where the money that has gone to MadLit comes out of.
Oh, okay. Sorry, I misunderstood. I was going to say that was a pretty healthy amount of money that you've been able to raise. Other sources of fund, in terms of fundraising for this event from other sources other than just private donations, have you reached out to Destination Madison? You mentioned that this has a tourist element, that it vitally contributes to the tourist climate. Have you applied for any money from Destination Madison to be able to have some of that room tax money go towards an event that enhances tourism?
I'm not aware of a funding mechanism through Destination Madison. We've had some contact with them through the Greater Madison Music City Project early on, but haven't had much involvement in the past couple of years. So we aren't receiving any funding from Destination Madison. There is other, you know, we have a very small amount of arts funding that comes from room tax that is dedicated for other types of art events. As far as other places we get funding, from Exact Sciences, True Stage. We have some request into American Family, Summit Credit Union, Promega, and a few other personal donations.
For the series, do you mind sharing what you have budgeted? I apologize for misunderstanding that you had as much as $500,000, but how much do you have budgeted for the entire series? And just so I have that understanding.
Yes. So we have budgeted for this summer, we have budgeted $85,000 with the caveat that if not counting the city, we're still working on someone to support a national act, which would bump that up to $100,000. But that's what we're looking at for this year, staying a little conservative.
So you had planned on 30 out of 85 coming from the city, correctly?
Correct.
Okay. And is that roughly what you have experienced in the past, that the monies from the city have been roughly a third or a quarter or some percentage of your overall budget? I'm just trying to get an understanding as you started and seen this event grow, what share of your budget generally has come from the city? Do you know that? Have you tracked that over the years?
Yeah, it's been, I believe when we started out, it was about 20%. It's a little bit higher right now. As I said, a lot of nonprofits are kind of in this philanthropy slump at the moment. So there's still a couple sources out there that we're, looking to raise, but we do like to act on the safe side and then be able to bring more if we can as we go here, if that makes sense. So we've been between 20 and 30 this year. I think last year and this year it was around 35%.
In your application for these funds, were there any other organizations seeking funds to be able to put on this kind of event this summer on State Street?
So this particular fund, there hasn't been an application process. So I'll let your staff speak to that because I don't know the logistics of it. I know there's a couple events that have happened over the years, but nothing that's been recurring and definitely not similar to MadLit. There's been other things that are Black focused, but not what MadLit is trying to do.
In the future, would you be opposed to some kind of competitive process for these funds?
Not at all. I appreciate that question. I do think just because of the amount that the city has invested in studies about what's needed for equity in our arts and culture scene. It's important for the city to increase financial support for those types of things and figure out where that makes sense. At the same time, as an organization that advocates broadly for equity and fairness, we absolutely have no problem with, putting in a bid or putting in a project proposal and, competing with other people that might also have good ideas. So I'm definitely open to that.
Right. That's all my questions right now, Mayor.
Thanks.
Thank you, Alder. President Bitiver, questions?
Thank you, Mayor. I think it's for Karen, too. So, first, I just want to say that, I deeply appreciate the work that MadLit is doing. I do think it's a really amazing program. And you mentioned the need for the city to invest in these types of activities. And at the same time, the city is facing really unprecedented challenges with budgets. So my question is about your sustainability plan. And if the city is not in a position to be able to fund this either now or in the future, how you have developed plans for being able to sustain it long term?
Yeah, thanks for that question. Last year, we started working with Eugenia Podesta and Elevate together to bolster our strategic plan, specifically to get our individual and foundation donations up. So we're actively working on that at the moment. And then we've also been applying for a wider variety of grants and have started personal relationships with different corporate partners to make sure that we can increase this funding. We know that we can never count on something forever, right? And we also want to be respectful of the funds that are available in the city. So we are working to really get our own fundraising up, which, by the way, is very difficult for an event that focuses a lot on hip-hop culture and Black culture in our experience for UCAN over the past 15 years. And as a lot of data shows, Black-led organizations and women-led organizations have a much harder time raising funds, but we are actively working with them, and also Madison Community Foundation has provided a capacity building grant for us to be able to improve our power.
Thank you.
Thank you, Alder. Alder Madison, additional questions? You're muted, Alder.
Yay, in 2025, still muted. For UCAN, the fees that you would pay back to the city, I believe they were estimated at last year at $2,800. Is that correct?
That's correct.
All right. Thank you. My other questions will be for staff. Thank you.
Thank you, Alder. Are there any Alder Evers and another question for registrants?
It's probably for Karen, and it may also be for staff. Are there in-kind services that the city provides that you include in your budgeting? In other words, you're referring to this as somewhat of a venue. Does the city provide security in the form of a heightened police presence or any other services that otherwise you might have to pay for if this was held elsewhere other than State Street? For example, if it was held on renting property from the Alliant Energy Center, that you may be charged. So are there in-kind donations that the city is making that work their way into your budget?
Only by way of providing the traffic barriers at the end of the street, making sure the streets are closed off. We pay for the bus rerouting, and sometimes we pay for cleanup if, there's a little more traffic on the street. We also pay the permit fees. And if the police recommend it, we would be allowed to hire off-duty police officers for security, but the city doesn't provide that in kind.
Thank you, Alder. Any additional questions? If not, thank you, Karen, for taking all those questions. We're on item three. Can I get a motion, please, President Bitiver?
Move to approve.
Second.
Moved and seconded to approve item three. Is there discussion? Alder Madison?
Yes. this having not a big screen anywhere at home is a challenge. All right. So I do just want to say a couple of things on why I decided to work on this. And I wrote a pretty lengthy blog post that has a lot of this in this. We did get a couple emails that are either attached or, you know, you can find in Legistar hopefully by now for alders to read and get caught up on it. But in short, MadLit returns 5 to 10 times the city's investment in literally just one summer. Plus, it creates cultural, economic, and social benefits that no other downtown event comes close to replicating, especially for communities of color. Some of the things I want to highlight that I put in my blog post today about this, this really gets at literally one recommendation. Like, you know, Alder Vittiver asked about a sustainability plan. And my first thought was, what is the city's sustainability plan to even get at all of the recommendations, or at minimum, more than one recommendation, for example? So I've sat on Economic Development Committee for a couple years now, even before I was alder, and I have the fortune, you know, I'm fortunate to get to hear their impact every year. I do want to remind alders, it's in the blog, but they started at $26,000 in 2021, and they've received $30,000 for 2023 and 2024. As someone who also runs an organization, a cut in half a few months for an event and not getting, like, a bunch of lead time, it is very much a regressive, it's super regressive and super illogical. And in my opinion, it's irresponsible of us to sort of like throw that kind of chaos on this kind of organization, for example. There really are no comparable alternative events that are happening to the degree that MadLit is. I also put their links and links to photos, links to the impact report also in my blog post today. It definitely creates all of the economic opportunities that we would want from an event like this and our return on a mere $30,000. It pays artists, it provides platform for small businesses, food vendors, entrepreneurs of color, and it absolutely does stimulate the downtown economy. As we just heard, there have not been any major safety concerns downtown. The organization has had a strong history of fiscal responsibility. And again, making this kind of cut with such a short notice and not enough lead time to prepare the organization, for example, I think that's absolutely wrong. And it tells us, or a signal to the community really, that here we are asking this kind of community to sort of like eat the burden even further. So I want to say or reiterate what's in the blog post again. I'm fully committed to working with y'all, you know, city staff and stakeholders to find sustainable solutions for future budgets. I don't think the city ever should remove itself from providing some sort of support in this kind of option, because it's literally part of our recommendations for how we're serving folks of color in our city, or, you know, failing at serving them for decades. So it's completely unfair to throw the organization into chaos with such short lead way to sort of find a different solution in such a short amount of time. So I'm committed to working on something different, but my brain doesn't process how you throw something in chaos when it is, we didn't give them enough time to sort of like circle back and find enough time, you know, like to know about what we were proposing to do so they could, you know, have more than a few months to overcome the deficit, I guess. So that's where I'm at. That's why I decided to work on it. I'm hopeful you all support it, not just because it would be chaotic to do anything less, but because we all know the city's history around being able, or its inability to serve folks who most find MadLit to be enjoyable, who are attracted to that event. So.
Thank you, Alder. Alder Evers?
Thank you, Mayor. I'll be voting in support of this, but I wonder if either in the form of a friendly amendment or just a recommendation to staff that in future years, starting next year, that this be subject to a competitive process, so that, you know, that other organizations could apply for funds to be able to put on a similar event with the same goals.
Thank you, Alder. I think if you are amenable to having that be a recommendation for staff to work with Economic Development Committee and my office, rather than making it formalized. I think that would be allow some more flexibility for potential solutions.
Yes, most certainly. That's fine. That's my
thank you, Alder.
Hope that that recommendation would be applied for succeeding years.
Yeah, I think there is consensus that in subsequent years we're going to need to look at the structure of the support for this event, and certainly a competitive process is potentially part of that. Alder Vidiver?
Just a note to say thank you, because I think this is a relatively minimal investment by the city, and I am incredibly impressed by the people who were prepared and were prepared to answer tough questions. We don't always see that. So I just want to say thank you for being a great organization.
Thank you, Alder. It's been moved and seconded. Is there any further discussion? Seeing none, is there any objection to recording unanimous vote in favor of item 3? Seeing no objection, recording unanimous vote in favor of item 3. That will take us to item 6, which is Legistar 87830, authorizing the mayor and clerk to execute a parking lot and driveway use agreement with the Steve Stricker American Family Insurance Foundation for the use of the parking lots in Cherokee Marsh Conservation Park North Unit during the American Family Insurance Championship. On item 6... we have registrants wishing to speak. First is Nicholas Davies of District 15, to be followed by Marsha Cannon, to be followed by Matthew Peterson. Do we have Nicholas?
Good evening. I hope my audio holds up.
Yep, go ahead.
Yeah, I wanted to share some concerns about the proposed agreement. You know, that this is going to limit equitable access to the park. The agreement says that the park will still be open, but only for walk-in and bike-in access. This is a park that Cherokee Marsh North has no transit access, really. Walk and bike-in can work for some visitors, but for some visitors, it's going to be a real barrier. The solution that I see there is to parking lots of for park visitors have accessibility.
Nicholas, you're breaking up a little bit on us.
Can I have another microphone? Come back to me?
Yeah, we can come back to you. So we'll go next then to Marsha Cannon of District 18, to be followed by Matthew Peterson, and we'll circle back to Nicholas. Do we have Marsha?
I'm here.
Go ahead.
Okay, I'll keep it short and sweet. I urge you to not recommend this agreement. We have had a conservation park program since 1961. As far as I know, this is the first request to put conservation park land that is protected to make an exception to use it for commercial purposes. It's coming at the last minute. I don't deny that the proponents are proposing to do really good work, but that does not equate with giving away to a golf tournament with a $3 million purse parking space for a week for $1,400. It just doesn't make sense. I don't think it should ever be given away, no matter what the donation or the cost to the proponents. They are intended as a safeguard to Madison's natural systems, not to fulfill the needs of private sports companies. So I urge you to vote no. Thank you.
Thank you. Our next registrant is Matthew Peterson of District 18, and then we'll go back to Nicholas Davies. Do we have Matthew? Matthew, you should be able to unmute yourself. There should be a prompt. There you go. Oh, but we still can't hear you if you're speaking. Might be a microphone issue. All right, let's try Nicholas again and come back to Matthew.
Yes, I think I have it worked out now.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Why don't you start from the top again?
Yeah. So I wanted to share some concerns about the proposed agreement. It's going to limit equitable access to the park. This Cherokee Marsh North has no transit service. The agreement does say that walk-in and bike-in access will be maintained, and that's going to work fine for some visitors, but not others. It's going to be a real barrier for some. The solution here that I see would be to keep a limited portion of the parking lots available for park visitors that have these accessibility needs. And I would like to see that any exclusivity agreement should account for the lost value of the park system due to making Madison's largest park inaccessible for an entire week. And, you know, I'd also like to see us limit the length of the full closure and not do a full week for a weekend event. You know, the agreement also sets no limits on the intensity of the use. While normal park visitor volume may be fairly low-key, event vendor support could include a lot of vehicles stored and a lot of vehicle traffic in and out, and this could be very disruptive to wildlife, and ecological damage isn't easy or cheap to fix. One commenter pointed out that the other party of this agreement is required to be aware of the park rules, but there's nothing in place to ensure that subcontractors follow those rules. For example, the agreement lists hours going as late as 10 p.m., whereas normal park usage would end an hour after sunset. So a solution here, I would see that the agreement should set maximum usage limits to keep habitat impact at its usual level, and the usage fee should be based on the intensity of the usage. Thirdly, you know, there's no time here for a robust public process. A lot of neighborhood residents have called this out in their input. The agreement includes a payment date of May 2nd, which will definitely be in the past by the time this agreement is adopted, based on when this would return to Common Council. And that leaves no time for additional meetings or referrals if we need them. So that may lead to committees and commissions, such as yourselves, feeling railroaded into accepting this agreement as is. And as far as that concern, I don't really see a solution. But it also kind of speaks to how optional this agreement is. You know, it really can't be essential to the event if they only brought it up at a time when it doesn't have really have time to go through the process. It's entirely optional.
You have about 20 seconds.
Thanks. Anyone who's parking 0.7 miles away and walking back could alternatively use the off-site parking and shuttle system. Thank you.
Thank you. All right, let us try again for Matthew. Matthew, you look like you're unmuted on our end. But if you're speaking, we definitely can't hear you. Maybe check to see that you've got the right microphone chosen in Zoom, or if you're using a headset that it's not muted. Yeah, we're still not able to hear you. I'm not sure what the issue is. So I would invite you to send an email to the Finance Committee with your comments. I see you already did. So I'll refer members of the Finance Committee to the email that was in the packet. That you received from Christine, that it comes from Matthew Peterson. And with apologies that your technology, we can't get your technology to talk to our technology, Matthew. So are there questions for any of the registrants on item 6 that we can hear from? Seeing none, then on item 6, can I get a motion, please?
Move to adopt.
Is there a second?
Second.
Moved and seconded to adopt item 6. I anticipate that perhaps there are questions for staff on this item. And I believe we have park staff with us. Alder Figueroa Cole. You're muted, Alder.
Yeah, thank you. Hi, CJ. As the sponsor of this resolution, I think when you first brought it to me, my first question was what the community engagement will look like. Can you please elaborate on how has that, what step has been taken to do the community engagement and communication about this event?
Certainly. Hi, everyone. When we first got this agreement together, I had checked in with the Friends of Cherokee Marsh. That is the engagement that Parks has done directly. And they were, frankly, not happy about it, but understood the reality of the situation is that Sherman Avenue is going to be closed for the duration of the event in order to for the security of the event. And what we needed to be able to do was take advantage of a situation that is not great, try to get a return for the park, and make sure that we can sustain access for pedestrians and bicycles. The event organizer, Katie Johnson, I believe she's here, she can answer questions about the other engagement that they have done with the community. They've talked to a number of different groups. And then I will also let you know that the council office is working with Alder Glenn and the event organizers and parks to have a community meeting on the north side in May. I believe that's still being scheduled. And so that's what I can speak to as far as community engagement around this.
Is there a safety plan in place, or is it expected to have a safety plan in place on how to use the property or the land area?
So the event organizers have worked through this street use staff team in order to make sure that they have all of their requirements in place. They've coordinated with all of the different city agencies as to for this event.
Thank you, CJ. Mayor, is it okay to ask for the person in the group to share what community engagements they have produced already?
Is there any objection from the body to going back to questions? Seeing none, is it Katie Johnson?
Yes, Katie Johnson. Thank you. Katie, can you please give us a summary of what level of engagement you have completed so far for this project?
Yep. Can everyone hear me?
Yes.
Okay, my colleague Nate Pokras is here as well, so he might as well chime in, but I will start with the kind of community engagement process. So earlier this year, we've reached out to the, I think it's roughly 20 neighborhood associations with just a general email and provided contact information for questions about the event. We did also notify the past alders of District 12 and 18 about the event, and then we've had in-person meetings with specifically the leaders of the Cherokee Park Neighborhood Association and the Cherokee Garden Condo Association. Those folks we met with more recently, but we've been in email communication with them for the last couple months, just notifying them about our plans to, you know, help provide security for the Cherokee Park neighborhood. About the plans on Sherman Avenue to keep them abreast on that. And then we will continue to share information as we finalize our plans with parking passes and via direct mail communication through them. But as CJ alluded to, we're working with Alder Glenn on an upcoming meeting in May. We've also attended coffee with a cop recently at the Warner Park Community Center. And we've hosted other listening sessions for, like, our alcohol license application and publicly announced tournament parking and stuff like that via our website. But we do a lot of communication through our website and answer a lot of questions through our Stricker Foundation mailbox directly to folks who reach out to us.
And I have one more question.
Yes.
Thank you for the latitude, Mayor. So on regards to this particular event, is this like people have commented that this is a private event, but it's my understanding this is an event also that raises funds for that are given back to the community. Can you please elaborate on that concept?
Yeah, definitely. So it is a week-long event that takes place over at TPC Wisconsin, June 2nd through the 8th. And we do have some private events and player practice rounds, PGA Tour practice rounds during the week. And then on Friday, Saturday, and Sunday of the tournament is when the public is on site and viewing and watching our tournament rounds. But the direct proceeds from this benefit our community. And so we've raised nearly $20 million that we've given back to the Madison area community here. And some of those organizations are Northside community organizations, like Veracourt Neighborhood Center and River Food Pantry, East Madison Community Center, Madison Parks Foundation, Madison Public Schools Foundation. So it's a very direct impact that we see here in our local community and something that we're really proud of. And it is the main reason that we run this event each and every year.
Thank you, Katie. I have one more question for CJ. Then I end with that.
So let's see. Are there other questions for Katie before we go back to staff? Alder Evers?
Yes. Thank you, Mayor. Katie, there are concerns that people have on potential ecological impacts to the park itself and to the wildlife. I assume that may most likely happen in terms of noise pollution of some sort. Are you cognizant of the kind of adjacent qualities of the wildlife considerations? Will there be any, you know, limits on the use of, you know, decibel limits or anything like that with respect to your public announcing and things like that? Or I assume there'll be no fireworks displays at any point in the weekend, or maybe I just need to ask that question. Again, what kinds of considerations have you offered the city in this agreement in recognition that you're right next to a conservation park?
Yeah, absolutely. Can I kick this one to my colleague, Nate Pokras, who's also on the call today?
Yep. We got Nate, please.
Very good. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Thank you. Again, my name is Nate Pokras. I serve as executive director of the Steve Stricker American Family Insurance Foundation and tournament director of the AmFam Champ. Katie's touched on a number of points, but to your specific questions regarding the preservation of the marsh parking lot, certainly we, during all our pre-tournament meetings with our vendors that would be in that space, we've expressed all the plans and expectations to protect that environment. We will be putting up signage barriers that limit the traffic strictly to the gravel only. We will use only the gravel space. We've been very clear about not disrupting any of the environment. Again, we will follow all park ordinances, no alcohol on site. We also have an operations team that will be checking in multiple times per day throughout the week to ensure vendor compliance. From the standpoint of noise, it's vehicular traffic, which is standard to the area right now on a day-to-day basis. Other than that, most usage is through golf cart usage, which is already happening on the golf course. We do have generators on site, but all of those are solar powered and battery operated, so they actually do not generate any sound or emit any emissions into the air, because we are going with a solar generator element that is completely quiet. So we completely respect and adhere to all the expectations of using that space. Additionally, we do, because of our safety plan and that's been developed in collaboration with Madison Police Department, we do need to ensure a safe environment, hence why we're trying to control traffic in that area to vehicles we're aware of, and having off-site parking for all other access to the event. But again, we're really trying to ensure a safe environment given the proximity of the road to the golf course and to control that traffic. Glad to answer any additional questions along with Katie as well.
Well, just as a follow-up regarding other decibel considerations, your public address system, how I know that in golf you don't necessarily have, it's not like a play-by-play, but are there restrictions on how frequently that might be used?
Yes, it's a golf event. Therefore, the environment is quiet. We have very little noise, sound, very centralized focused speakers that aren't very loud given during golf play. It is an expectation of quiet. It is a daytime event that occurs typically, barring any weather issues, from 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. The event is done during daytime. We do not host fireworks. We do not host concerts on site. So from a sound standpoint, given the nature of golf tournaments, it'll be extremely quiet that we will be generating from a noise element.
Thank you. That's all.
Thank you, Alder. Any additional questions for this team? All right. Seeing none, then we'll go back to park staff. Alder Figueroa-Cole.
Thank you. CJ, you mentioned something about the road. The road will be closed. Is that part of the street use permit process?
Yes, it is.
So the entire road is going to be closed, not just the park's access itself. So it's not like Correct. We are park's contract is limited access to cars. It's just that the road is going to be closed already, and then which is part not in, you know, that's part of the permit. Street permits use process, and then what you guys worked out is to allow bikes and pedestrians to be able to access it, which in other ways wouldn't be in if you guys had interfered on that. But I just wanted to verify that it's not that road is going to be closed. The access to the park is going to be closed. It's the entire road will be closed.
Right. So starting at Wheeler, North Sherman Avenue will be closed to any traffic that is not associated with the event. And so we wanted to make sure that peds and bikes are able to access it. And also it was mutually beneficial, but it's if the road is going to be closed and public vehicles aren't going to be allowed, we can get some benefit to go back to the park, even though it's not as accessible as it would be otherwise for this week.
Well, thank you for answering the questions. Appreciate it. Mm-hmm. That's all I got, Mayor.
Thank you, Alder. Are there any other questions for staff on this item? Seeing none, then item 6 has been moved and seconded. Is there any discussion? Seeing no discussion, item 6 has been moved and seconded. Is there any objection to recording a unanimous vote in favor? Seeing no objection, we'll record a unanimous vote in favor of item 6. And that will take us to item 11, which is Legistar 86892, an update on federal executive orders and directives to pause federal grants and loans. Dave?
Thank you, Mayor. Good evening, Finance Committee members. We don't have a lot to report today. On the legal side, there really aren't any updates to report relative to activity already underway in the court system challenging some of the actions of the administration. On the grant side, grants seem to be flowing. We got some couple points of good news over the past week. One is the BRIC program, which is Building Resilient Infrastructure and Communities. That's a FEMA program, which had been paused, but has since been, that pause has been lifted, and the city has a $6 million grant through that program for a stormwater project that is already underway, already under construction. The other program is one we've talked about in a couple of these meetings, and that's the community change grants from EPA, and those had been paused since late February. Today, we've found that they're now available within the EPA grants portal, and so we'll be moving really very quickly to submit reimbursement for invoices that have occurred since February. As we mentioned at the last meeting, the federal budget process is ramping up, and kind of early sort of indications from Congress is they will try to finish the budget by June. Whether or not that happens, we shall see. And one of the items on that list from the budget, which again we've talked about, is municipal bond interest, the tax exemption for that as a part of paying for continuing the tax cuts that were put into place in 2017. Some positive news on that is the chair of the House Financial Services Committee, that's not an appropriator committee, but it is one to at least have the chair speak out in favor of maintaining that tax exemption. And then there is a resolution that will be introducing to Congress or to the council on the meeting on the 20th to in support of maintaining that tax exemption. So, Mayor, with that, that's our quick report. Not a whole lot of update, but some good news.
Thank you, Dave. Any questions? Other Evers?
Thank you, Mayor. Director Schmidtke, could you speak to some of the issues regarding, first question might be about the interest rate. If the interest rate continues to stay where it is, does that mean, is that a positive for our investments and for money that we anticipate? What have we budgeted for with respect to the interest rate?
You kind of broke in and out on that. I think your question was around interest rate on our investments as a city
More on our borrowing. Yeah. We borrow money at a certain rate, and then so I assume then also we have investments and we anticipate a certain amount of revenue based on that, and a lot of it's in secure investments that are tied to the prime rate, and if the interest rate continues to stay up, that may be beneficial to the city. So I wonder if you could speak to that.
Yeah, you cut out again, but I think I understand your question, which is will the interest rates remain higher? What will the Fed do in terms of possible interest rates reductions? I think there's been a lot of, obviously, information in the news cycle around where the Fed is at and the concerns about what a tariff strategy might do to inflation. Again, those tariffs have been paused and uncertain what will happen with some of that. If we did build in higher interest investment income, into the 25 budget, as well as into long-range forecasts. Might be slightly higher than that, but it's hard to know right now. But if they stay higher, that'll be a positive on that end. I think the downside is higher debt service, higher interest costs on debt issued to pay for the city's capital program. Now, we do have the advantage of being a AAA issuer, and that helps to moderate our debt, plus our strategy of using 10-year notes primarily is another positive with that. But there are going to be many other credit pressures with whatever happens and what Congress does with the federal budget that could ultimately wash up into the city's finances, whether directly or indirectly. So a lot of uncertainty right now that we're watching closely. But yes, if interest rates stay higher, we'll see higher investment income, but we have built some of that in.
Thank you.
Thank you, Alder Figueroa Cole.
Thank you. David, is there a list of federal grants that we're currently holding that we haven't, that may become at available? I know that we have HUDs and the transportation. There's a lot on that side of things. But do we have a list of smaller items that may be impacted by the federal funding?
It's hard to know at this point what will happen with the federal budget. We do know all the grants that we do have. I think at the moment, what we've understood to be some of the risk areas could be programs within the Inflation Reduction Act and the bipartisan infrastructure law. Some of those are probably at higher risk. For example, the direct pay subsidy on certain programs that we, for example, have built about $13 million into the city's capital improvement plan, assuming that we'll get funding for those. Those could be at risk. I think other programs, it's just hard to know right now, particularly with in some of these, folks will say they're at risk, and then you'll also hear of pushback from places all over the country around getting rid of those direct pay tax credits because they're so integral to capital, certain types of capital projects.
Is there any concern specifically on the operating budget for any grants associated with the operating
budget? I mean, in certain programs, there could be some risk, but again, as a share of the city's operating budget, the federal dollars are relatively small on the operating side. And as we've talked about in prior briefings, most of that money is in the CDA for public housing type programs. And then the other large area is in transit. And again, hard to know exactly how that'll all play out in the federal budget. Again, transit's somewhat bipartisan. Local government, to some extent, some of the programs, the discretionary programs, I could see perhaps being at risk. The formula ones, it's they're embedded, but again, I'm speculating and hard to know exactly where Congress is going to go with all of this. But nonetheless, the scope is big. I think the budget sort of instructions that were passed by both the House and the Senate do give a lot of flexibility, with the House focused on Medicaid type areas. And less on transportation, but again, we will just have to watch how it's kind of playing out over the next few months.
Thank you.
Thank you, Alder.
Welcome.
Vice President Govindarajan.
Thank you. Thank you for that information, Dave. The cuts that you were talking about, the FEMA one and the EPA one, I know I emailed about this, but generally speaking, are we seeing cuts that Congress has already approved, or is it cuts that we were expecting them to approve? Is there like a pattern that we're seeing there?
So the administration is really only able to act on things that Congress has already approved. So these are things that are included in the budget that has been adopted or in enabling legislation that's been adopted. So we're not yet talking about budget cuts that are included in, for example, next year's federal budget. That's what Congress will begin to talk about. Right now, what we're seeing with the grants is administrative actions by federal agencies. But again, as we've seen, some of those have been rolled back or delayed, with the latest example being this community change grant that just happened today. Some of that, I think, is responses to court actions that are being taken, whether it's by states or interest groups in partnership with one another, with restraining orders and so on. So when we're talking about the grants that might be, delayed or reviewed or things like that, those are administrative actions of appropriations that have already been approved by Congress. Congress is now moving into a phase of looking at the federal fiscal year 26 budget, and those could include actual reductions to current law program funding levels or reductions in the pace of growth of certain programs that could affect the amount of federal aid that the city receives, or cities throughout the country, as well as states.
Okay, thank you so much.
Thank you, Alder. Any other questions? Seeing none, then thank you, Dave, for that report. And that brings us to the end of our agenda. I'd entertain a motion to adjourn.
Move to adjourn.
Second.
Moved and seconded to adjourn. Is there any objection to recording a unanimous vote in favor of adjournment? Seeing no objection, we are adjourned. Have a good evening, everyone.